Oh, hello everybody. Hi. After lunch and Belgium. Right? Uh-oh. So, what could we do here actually? It's a Microsoft conference. You at least need to pretend some enthusiasm. Okay? I guess you have been paying for it, huh? Come on, you are not at home, so your wife is not looking at you. You're not at work, so your boss is not looking at you. So now you can be the person you are. Okay? And I really need your help because the problem is, this is a horribly boring topic. It's about communication and cloud and Okay? In order for me not to fall asleep, and especially for you not to fall asleep, you need to fill this room, this big, 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 awesome room, a little bit with more laugh and vibration. Belgium vibration. Think about the beer in the evening. Huh? Let's call it Duvel vibration. Okay? So, hello everybody. Hi. Better. Okay. I am glad again to be in Belgium. So this session is going to be about communicating with the cloud, through the cloud, and somehow also in the cloud. It's all about the Windows App Fabric Service Bus. So this is what it will be about and what it will not be about. So if you have followed Clemens Foster's session yesterday, the overview of the Windows App Fabric and which services are in there and where he demonstrated the available services and the features and services to come. This is one thing, but I will focus on the currently in production service for the service bus. Okay? So first, we need to talk about the Windows I know here in Belgium, a lot of people speak French, right? Or at least with a French accent. So these people tend to say Windows Azure. Huh? If you listen to my friend Vittorio, maybe it's something like Windows Azzurro. If you listen to a German guy, it's Windows Azure. Or if you listen to a UK guy, the UK guys say Windows Azure. Oh, Azure. So I had a problem with that. Because you still remember those days with Windows Vista, where they said it's called Vista because Vista is pronounced the same way in every language all over the world. Talk about huh. Okay, so there is an official WAV file, and that's actually no kidding. That's the WAV file with the official Redmondian US Northwest Coast pronunciation of Windows huh. So welcome to the session about the Windows
Azure
App Fabric Service Bus. So again, the Windows
Azure
App Fabric Service Bus. So everybody, Windows
Azure
again, Windows
Azure.
Very good. So we are going to talk about the Windows Azure App Fabric and especially about the Service Bus, about communicating between applications, about communicating based on an endpoint kind of view, a service-oriented view, more or less. Okay. So who's already been dealing with Windows Azure these days, whether it's Azure Compute or any other Azure platform service? Just show hands. Okay. A bunch of you. Of course, the cloud is hip and the cloud is in and the cloud is cool and everybody and his mother is talking about the cloud, right? Cloud, 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 cloud. But it's really at very, very, very early stage. Okay. We have been doing a bunch of projects with clients and customers in the German-speaking area, also in the UK and partly in Scandinavia. But it's very, very early for the whole cloud computing industry, for the whole cloud computing idea and the services and the tools, and of course also for the Windows Azure platform, right? So if you want to see a little bit more when it comes to some pragmatic approach and pragmatic view of what you can do and how you can do it with Windows Azure platform, especially Windows Azure Compute today in those early days, I happily invite you to my second session at 4:15, something like that, where I will talk about some Windows Azure, well, real-world, pragmatic, by example aspects about deployment, about development, about scalability, and things like that. Okay, so who is this guy? I am Christian Weyer from a very, very small company called ThinkTecture. We are based in Germany. We are actually specializing in building, designing distributed application systems and application architectures for the past, well, 10-plus years. My special area of expertise has always been everything around services and service orientation, even in the early days when the technology stack was just called web services. But now, of course, we have a much more open choice of, well, of design patterns and also technologies. And what I have been doing in the past months and, well, months to years is to look at to end-to-end aspects of application architecture, right? Because it's nice that you know about WCF. It's nice that you know about Entity Framework or Anhibernate, I don't know. It's nice that you know about Windows Presentation Foundation and or Silverlight. But where it really starts to make sense, especially as a technical consultant trying to help companies and guys like you here in the room, is when you try to cover the end-to-end aspect of distributed applications, because you need to know it from the UI over the communication layer, maybe incorporate some caching into the service layer, then to the business or data access layer and the data sources themselves and stuff like that. And the actual development and move into a rather mobile world, whether it's this form factor or just the small phones, actually puts even more importance onto this aspect of end-to-end, because we cannot just look independently at all these pieces. This is also the reason why I'm looking into the cloud and why I'm looking into Windows Azure Platform, because in the cloud I can see a lot of potential, a lot of potential for running my applications in the cloud. That will be covered in the second session, but also using the cloud as a means of connecting applications, of connecting data, of connecting devices, ubiquitous communication, ubiquitous computing. Wherever I am, wherever I may roam, you know, wherever I use which device, I can always communicate through and with the cloud, with some applications, with some communication endpoints, or with other devices. And that's what I find, well, very sexy, to say the least. Okay? The most important thing about me is actually my email address. So that's why it's highlighted in yellow, christian.weyer@thinktecture.com. If you have questions regarding this session, if you have questions regarding my other sessions or any other topic about distributed.NET, Windows Azure Platform, Windows Communication Foundation, do not hesitate and send me an email, okay? That would be great. So let's ride the bus. Let's ride the service bus. What is the service bus all about? Why should I care about the service bus? And how can I actually use the service bus, well, already today? And yes, we will see a lot of communication aspects. So there will be no flying boxes, no Silverlight animations, no cool Windows phones sliding, whatever super duper UIs. It's just pure, I don't know, XML, ankle brackets, TCP, HTTP, SOAP, whatever. Okay? So open your mind. Just imagine it's all freaking cool. Great. So we will talk about the motivation and the scenarios that we can envision where we may want to use something as a ubiquitous communication means in the cloud. We will talk about how this actually works, which features the service bus today. I'm talking about the version 1, not what happens in the future, right? I try to be as pragmatic as possible with already this even very, very early stage of the cloud services and not look too much into yet another CDP and yet another CDP and yet another CDP. So let's stick to version 1. Then we will look at how to program this. Well, there are two basic or major programming models and programming APIs today. The first one is WCF based, or an extension to the Windows Communication Foundation, and the other one is a pure HTTP based programming model, which they call the message buffers. And yes, of course, we have to talk a little bit about what about interoperability, for example, with these mobile things here. We have to talk about security aspects and stuff like that. Okay, so who is dealing with the Windows Communication Foundation in production today? So that I know, okay. Not too many, but it's okay. Because some of the samples, actually the major part of the samples, builds on WCF and on the Windows Communication Foundation and the idea of how it's working as a technology to realize the idea of service orientation and service-oriented applications. A lot of the arguments about the cloud are, oh yes, go into the cloud and be happy. What does that mean? Move into the cloud and you'll be happy. For several reasons, of course. One reason is cost aspects. Another reason is reachability. Another reason is availability. And maybe the most advertised reason is scalability, right? But yet I have to come over a client that we're dealing with that has the scalability needs of, let's say, Twitter or Facebook. So who is building such a site? No one? Strange. So if you are, you know my email address, right? Just let me know and we can... Cloud? Yes, scalability is nice, and the feature that we can get through the cloud, like elasticity, that's also nice. But I don't see in the coming years that enterprises, especially enterprises, and a lot of applications inside of the enterprise and on at the edge of the enterprise will move completely into the cloud. This will not happen. Because there is at least one problematic point that, of course, is also discussed, but usually the focus is on the shiny, brighty, good side of the cloud. And that problematic point is what? Data sovereignty, data integrity, who owns the data, things like that. Okay? So if we imagine an enterprise which is highly integrated with a lot of systems, let's call it systems, like customer relationship management, or like enterprise resource planning. Some of these systems may be old school dinosaurs, right? Others may be custom systems, maybe custom implementations, your very own implementations, yet other may be on top of a, let's call it a software as a services platform where you put on top your own logic and your own application, pieces. And yet others may be super duper modern where you really designed them and did the architecture in a very service oriented way. Okay? And now things may happen that some responsible person says, okay, we are either going to sell part of these systems or of the responsibility of these systems, or we are going to have a merger. Right? And with that merger, we need to integrate existing applications now. Immediately, without a lot of politics and without a lot of obstacles, physical obstacles or social obstacles or business obstacles. Okay? So the idea is that someday, and we have a number of small to medium and now also a big client in Germany who exactly see this problem, that someday a service will be moved out of the enterprise. It will be moved beyond their actually security realm. It will be moved beyond their physical boundaries. It will be put somewhere where actually that service can be reached. That's the easy part. But the problematic part is, how can that service or that part of the application ecosystem call back into the necessary services that are still running on-premise, right? Oh, sorry. On-premise is the new word for local, and cloud is the new word for internet. just in case you didn't hear. Okay? So on-premise is local. So in that scenario, it may be necessary for us with the yellow arrows and the yellow question marks to find a solution, well, that is viable to implement and to realize and to run so that this now external service sitting behind the firewall and sitting behind the NAT, the network address translation devices, so that it's still able to call into us, okay? That's one possible scenario. And you can actually translate that. Take any application you are running in the cloud. So who is running applications in the cloud? Whether that's EC2 or Google App Engine or Azure Compute. Okay. I'm sure some of you have had the need to call from that cloud running application into some local running system or some local running application. And whether it's just for monitoring purposes, right? Because monitoring applications in the cloud can be really, really, really like hell. So the actual issue to solve is, nice. So now we are sitting behind all that obstacles. It's an existing service endpoint in the ERP that we need to use. There is no special or explicit mutual trust between those systems. There is no possibility to spin up a VPN, because spinning up VPNs usually ends up being that one solution, right? So who is doing Windows Azure Compute in the cloud? Okay, in Windows Azure, we have something like Windows Azure Connect. Windows Azure Connect is a VPN-based solution to solve part of this problem. But what we do with Windows Azure Connect is we actually, on the network layer, open up our system just through a VPN tunnel into that cloud role deployment that runs in the Microsoft data centers. Maybe I don't want to do that, because that's just too broad to open up. I only want to go very, very restricted on that very special dedicated service endpoint. And what about controlling who has access and who has not? Maybe inside of the enterprise, there was already some authentication and authorization system in place, maybe Active Directory-based, maybe some custom-based stuff. What about that one? So that's a real, real problem. Let's look at a very simple example. So I have an application running in the cloud. That's a security token service. It's an identity provider. That identity provider speaks all those fancy protocols like WS Trust, WS Federation, and sample tokens and OpenID and yada, yada, yada. Nice, cool stuff. Works, rocks, kicks ass. Oh, it's rocks, right? But if we take a look here, you can see that this application is being hosted in our Windows Azure Compute realm, and it's running happily in the cloud, being able to receive requests from users who want to authenticate. And if they are authenticated in a successful way, boop, it returns back tokens containing claims and information about, for example, the user and or maybe also about the application. So what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to monitor in a very easy way what happens inside of this application in the cloud. I don't want to have to do a remote desktop thing. I don't want to leverage Windows Azure Diagnostics, which can be a little bit painful from time to time. I just want to be able to fire up an application here. So let's just fire up this application. And let's start it. So what this application does now, it exposes an endpoint on the local machine into the cloud. And the application that's running in the Azure cloud, and by the way, it could be running anywhere. It could be running in EC2 cloud, it could be running in App Engine cloud, it could be running on your hoster, wherever. This application in the cloud is then calling this endpoint, although it's sitting right on my physical machine, on-premise. So if we go here, start, okay. If we now go and, for example, go ahead and log in. I think I mistyped. What we can see here is some tracing information that was pushed to a public endpoint running, or not running, sitting in the cloud, but the actual endpoint is running on my machine. And it's been exposed in a very sensitive and very secure way. And that's one thing you can think about, how you could use something like the Windows Azure App Fabric Service Bus in order to connect local systems with cloud systems with cloud systems, and local systems with yet other local systems. Okay? So one question for you guys. Who has a laptop here? And I know I should not be doing this in the live session, but yes, I will do it anyway. No risk, no fun. You have a laptop with, Windows 7? .NET 4 installed? You not? You have. Okay. I may come back to you in a few hours, minutes, because I may need you for a demonstration. And if the demonstration, if the demo does not succeed, it's your fault. Okay? Great. Just to make sure. I should not do this. So who's driving a hybrid car? Well, I would never ask this question at a German conference, obviously, but also in Belgium, okay? So nobody's driving a hybrid car. So is there any advantage for driving a hybrid car? Other than most of the hybrid cars look like crap today, but and as a man, as a real man, you need a real engine, eh? Any advantages? Well, of course, it gives us the best of two worlds, the best of both worlds, right? The best of the electric engine or gear and the best of the old, well-known, common way of building engines and cars. And what the service bus gives me is actually the best of two worlds in terms of cloud computing. I can use existing local applications, use existing local data, expose them through the cloud to others. And maybe with that approach, I can solve parts of the problem and parts of that question, who owns the data? Where is the data? What about data sovereignty? What about versioning of data in the cloud? What about encrypting data if it's public? And so on and so forth. So the service bus for me and all the other services in the App Fabric are very, very much about developer and runtime infrastructure services that try to bridge the gap. The gap between up there and down here. So which scenarios and patterns could we else imagine? Well, another one that I'm seeing quite a lot is publish and subscribe, which means distributing events and messages through a service bus-like construct. That's, by the way, the origin of the name of the product. So the product originated in something they called BizTalk services. Who still remembers? That was 2008-ish, I guess. Then it was called .NET Services. And then it was called Windows Azure Platform App Fabric. And now it's Windows Azure App Fabric. Another scenario that I see from time to time is tunneling. Security-wise, I don't like it too much. What you can do here is that you have fully capable server products. For example, like, I don't know, SQL Server. For example, like your SAP system. For example, any other kind of custom server that you may have built. And you can, by using, well, a raw, bare-bones approach to expose this server through the service bus, you can actually expose it to natural client applications to these servers. So one example is SQL Server. What is a natural client application for SQL Server? SQL Server Management Studio. There you go. So what you could and what you can do, but I always have a problem architectural-wise and try to get around this, but sometimes you just have to do it. What you could do is you could use the service bus, expose that SQL Server endpoint through the service bus. On the other side, you need a small stub-like application and piece of logic that translates from the original, well, TDS over TCP to the service bus protocol, and then on the other side back. So it is possible to tunnel existing applications and existing communication protocols, but usually we see it used in terms of exposing, well, service endpoints. All right. The problem now that we see is, okay, this is a laptop, right? This laptop has a Windows firewall. This laptop is here in this conference network, and I suppose there is also a firewall up there. And I suppose they also have some kind of network address translation device in front of it because of the well-known IPv4 address shortage problem. So actually, physically, my machine is not reachable, right? And I see this a lot when customers walk up to us and say, okay, especially with these mobile devices. This is a mobile device from another vendor, by the way. Not sure you know it. Not going to name it. Fresh Fruits. Okay, so whether it's a real smart client application or whether it's a mobile application, they want to be able that application systems, server systems, notify them when something happens. And maybe in a cost-effective way. Cost-effective, for example, may rule out polling. Polling may be too expensive, depending on the network setup and the carrier setup. So what they want to have is physical security, be shielded by the big bad world and the big bad internet, but still be able to receive messages that are being pushed into them, right? And this means we see this especially with the mobile devices, but we also see this in common application architecture. We are moving kind of away from the hierarchical server and client and server, master and servant thing, but more to a peer-to-peer application architecture style where any kind of application can expose service endpoints. And this is what a lot of people did not yet fully grok with a technology like WCF. It's a matter of a few lines of code and 5,486 lines of configuration to open up a service endpoint in any kind of managed application. Windows Forms, WPF, Windows Service, IIS-based application, right? And you no longer have to adhere to that classic picture of a service being a web service being hosted in a web server, right? That's just one very small edge and one very small tiny piece of possibilities with service-oriented systems. So more like peer-to-peer. And of course, it would be nice if I could use those other platforms and other technologies in order to talk through the cloud and with the cloud and not being bound to some Microsoft technology or .NET framework or Windows Communication Foundation. So yes, there are solutions like the already mentioned VPN and like the already mentioned opening up firewall ports, but hey people, it's not going to work. VPNs work if it's a small scale scenario and if you are good friends with the administrators, right? Even if you are good friends with the administrators, opening up firewalls will not work. Usually. If you can drink more Duvel than the IT admin, then maybe it will work. But otherwise it won't. Otherwise it won't. So we need to have some kind of different solution, and that's what we call the communication Swiss Army knife. Right? So who owns a real Swiss Army knife? There you go. Tomorrow you will send me an email that you have tried out the service bus because you are those kind of people that want to try out this cool stuff. Okay? So the Swiss Army knife for communication is placed inside of the Windows Azure App Fabric. And it's called the service bus. There are other services. One service that was released in the first place together with the service bus, 1.5 years, was the access control service. And the service bus today still works very closely with the access control service. Other services that are now being developed are the composite app feature and the integration feature and service. And the service that is going to be released quite soon, in a few days or weeks, is the caching service, where I can use a distributed in-memory cache just as a service feature when running my applications in the cloud. This is a very, very attractive service if you are planning to run your web applications, your services in Windows Azure Compute, and still want to have a maximum throughput and low latency kind of architecture in order to avoid too many hits on the database, too many hits on external services, and similar architectural assets. So, the service bus, I call it from time to time the communication rendezvous in the cloud. Isn't that some kind of romantic? I see a number of beautiful women in here, so I need to put at least a little bit of romantic out here. Does it sound like no? Oh, come on, go on. So it's a communication rendezvous point, which means that our applications are not running in the Windows Azure app fabric. Our applications running where they are running. Okay, they may run in the cloud, but then that's Windows Azure Compute. They may run in any other cloud, or they run in our machines inside of the enterprise, or on my mobile device, or on my laptop, like here. So what the service bus offers is a very, very powerful and secure messaging and connectivity engine, or as it's sometimes called, fabric. And it offers also a naming system that nicely integrates with DNS, and we also have the possibility to incorporate our services and service endpoints exposed through the service bus in a very lightweight service registry. So this is how it works in, well, not just in theory, but also in practice, but from a very high level point of view. So again, the right side is what I call the receiver. The left side is what I call the sender. You remember? I'm no longer talking about client and server, because that's too classic in our head. I'm talking about sender and receiver. And the receiver in the sample at the beginning was my Windows Forms Trace Viewer application. That was the receiver. So that was the server, huh? Okay? And that application on the other side, sending messages to that receiving applications, was the web application running in Windows Azure. You get it? You get the picture? Okay. So what happens is when the receiving applications wants to open up an endpoint in the cloud, it always needs to authenticate. It needs. And how does that work? I already hinted at it. Access control service is in the house. And I'm sure Vittorio did a perfect presentation on the access control service. The access control service is configured with the service bus. So the service bus at the end of the day is a relying party for the access control service, spitting out claims inside of tokens that the service bus can understand. So we are requesting a token from the ACS, and then inside of the open call to the service bus, we are passing that token. Okay? So the service bus looks at certain claims. There are three claims. Manage, listen, and send. Manage is kind of the guard function, right? Where I can manage my endpoints and things inside of the service bus. And the other two importance for the applications are listen and send. Listen is like what I want to do from that side here. And send is what I want to do from that side here. Okay. So once that established, I have an endpoint open in the cloud called something like HTTPS, I don't know, techdaysbelgium.servicebus.windows.net/2011. And then there sits my service endpoint happily accepting messages or awaiting messages. Still running locally. Okay? On the other side, what that application I showed to you had to do is open up a channel again to the service bus and also authenticate. But authentication is opt-out. So usually you need to authenticate, but you as the receiver decide whether it's okay if there are anonymous senders to your endpoint. So in that case, we have a completely closed system in the sample I showed you. So that means now I also connect to the service bus, and this is how it all happens. We are connecting from inside to the outside. And this also solves somehow the firewall problem, right? There is no connection from the outside to the inside. There is always from the inside to the outside. And then if I call into the cloud, it's going through the service bus. The service bus relays, dispatches, and sends it downstream to the actual receiver. And the secret is that they try to keep these connections here open. That's the whole magic. You know how I call the service bus in funny words? It's Skype for developers. You know? Think about it. Especially if you know about this feature here. If you want to have this feature, if you want to avoid the relay through the cloud, because of course that means latency. If you want to avoid this and you want to try to go directly, I go directly through your firewall. If you want to enable this, you can opt in. And now we go Skype, huh? So what this can do is try and, well, let's not call it punch holes into the firewall, but let's try it. It tries to be firewall friendly. Okay? So it tries to establish a direct connection on a TCP-based channel. And that usually works, I tell you. I tried it at a lot of customers and a lot of institutions, and it works. I only had one problem, well, two problems in the meantime, but the most prominent problem was the University of Oslo. Not sure whether that hints at a problem with the code name Oslo, but it was the University of Oslo. Okay, so that's the big picture. Any questions here? No? Great. So based on that picture, we can go on and take a look at some use cases, at some scenarios, at some patterns that we can implement with it. The first one is service remoting. Service remoting means exactly what I have explained just a few seconds or minutes ago. I have a service running on my machine and I want others to access it. How can we do this? Well, first, let's do it via WCF, via the Windows Communication Foundation. Later on, we will see a sample with pure HTTP-based protocol called the message buffers. So WCF means what the service bus gives us is an extensibility, a bunch of extensibility classes to Windows Communication Foundation, namely a bunch of bindings and a bunch of behaviors, especially endpoint behaviors from the consuming side. Okay? So we have behaviors like web HTTP relay binding. We have net TCP relay binding. We have, I don't know, what else do we have? We have basic HTTP relay binding, okay? So it's feature-wise somehow the same set of features, but being exposed through the service bus relay and all the communication details and the control channels and trying to figure out whether they have to fall back to a certain other protocol. It's all encapsulated in those bindings. There are two special bindings, and these are the bindings I like the most. The problem is there are no equivalent bindings in WCF today. One is the net one-way relay binding, and the other one is the net event relay binding. What I can do with this, especially with the net event relay binding, is M2N publishing. That means I can have M, like mother, M publishers sending to an endpoint or to endpoints, and on the other side I can have N subscribers. Right? And this is something that I cannot have in an easy, configurable, binding-based WCF-like way today in .NET 4. But it is available through the cloud. And I hope to show you a sample with that as well. So, let's take a look at it. Let's write a very simple sample for that. So, the prototypical iEcho service. So it's at least not hello. Well, it's echo. Great. Woo-hoo-hoo. And I think you already fell asleep, right? And I told you it's going to be boring. Yeah? So what we are going to do is take this service contract, and it's actually not a pure service contract. It's a web programming model based service contract where we just put some HTTP based endpoint out there. We will put in some text and we'll get back some text. Therefore, it's called echo. The echo service itself is horribly complex. It just puts out the information onto the console and then puts it back as a result value. Great. Let's go for the host. This is nothing super spectacular. This is actually plain WCF. So we create a service host. We add an endpoint to it. The address is a local address. The contract is our iEcho service, and the binding is the, hopefully, in the meantime, well-known web HTTP binding for enabling the web programming model style of exposing services and not the SOAP style. So that's anti-SOAP, if you like. Okay? Let's take a look. It should open it up. Does it? Yes, it does. Because I'm not putting out anything. Huh? No exception works. That's like your code, right? Okay, so maybe let's put something in there in order to see where it is actually listening on. Let's take a look at the endpoints. Let's get a list from it. And from that list, let's say for each. And on those endpoints, let's do a console write line. Endpoint address, something like that. Okay, here we say something like service running. Just to make sure it is really running. Boom, runs. Okay, great. So that's a local thing. You cannot talk to me. If you can, I have a security problem with my machine. Okay? So let's try to cloud enable this. In order to cloud enable this, what I already did here is add a reference to Microsoft.ServiceBus. Microsoft.ServiceBus is from the Windows Azure App Fabric SDK. Okay? And in there are all those extensions to WCF. So what we will be doing now is add a bunch of things here. So first, we are going to use the same contract. Okay? Contract is the same. What needs to change is the address, because now that address is up there. And what needs to change is the binding, because we need the relay binding. Okay? So first we say cloud address. And there is a helper class called ServiceBusEnvironment. And ServiceBusEnvironment has something like create service URI. And what it gives me is a scheme a service namespace, and a service path. So scheme, if I choose to have HTTP, it's always HTTPS by default. I can opt out, but by default, we need to expose it through HTTPS over SSL. And then the service namespace. What is the service namespace? Turns out, this is an administrative step. So we need to change to the portal. So the portal is windows.azure.com, and then on the left-hand side, we have the ability here, down in the lower left corner, to change to service bus, access control, and caching. And here we have access control and service bus. What you can create is so-called service namespaces, which will be projected into your DNS URL. Okay? So I have Christian Weyer, ThinkTecture, and TechTeacher, but I'm just going to use ThinkTecture. So let's use ThinkTecture, and let's call it Tech Days Belgium. Okay? Great. What we now need is a binding. So the binding is Web HTTP relay binding. Huh? Through the cloud, being relayed. And we use the same contract. That means var cloud endpoint equals host.addServiceEndpoint. And on there we put the, it's actually contract, the cloud binding, and the cloud, address. Does it compile? Yeah, it compiles at least. Which also means it should work, right? Oh, maybe not. Okay, so this is what we need to do. Now, I told you when you want to expose an endpoint on the cloud, you need to authenticate, right? So authentication, what does it mean? Let's go here to my service namespace. And on that service namespace, I have several endpoints, endpoint information, and I also have several keys. So the currently released version of service bus is working with access control service version 1, the old version, the version that nobody really wants to deal with these days because ACS v2 is awesome, right? But here we still have to deal with v1. What we are going to do is to use the shared secret authentication process. If we have time at the end, I will show you that you also can federate with your identity provider. You can federate with your security token service and log in via username and password of your corporation or use client certificate or things like that. Okay? That's just the prototypical demonstration I'm doing here with these keys. There is an issuer and a key. The issuer is standard wise always owner, and I'm going to copy the key. Okay. So up here I'm doing something like var issuer equals owner. And here, var key equals, and now if you're quick enough, you can hack my application. Who got it? You, okay. But you don't have a laptop, huh? Or a phone, a Windows phone. Okay, that means we need to create something like authentication information. And this thing is living inside of a transport client endpoint behavior. Yes, it's kind of a strange name, but it is the way it is. On there, we have a credential type. And the credential type we are going to choose as shared secret. And then on the credentials.sharedSecret, we have the issuer, and issuer secret. How did I call it? Key, huh? Oh, no, I'm not going to look. Is it key? Yeah, thank you. And this behavior, we are going to attach to our cloud endpoint authentication. And what we also need to do is we need to add a web HTTP behavior, because that's the way the web programming currently works in WCF if you are not using a web service host, but a common service host. So does it compile? It should. Anything that I could have forgotten? Or should I just do F5? Okay, F5. Is it okay? I'm not looking. Yeah? Ah, that looks okay. So now this endpoint is exposed through thinkTexture.servicebus.windows.net/tdb. Well, Tech Days Belgium. The problem is what? You cannot send anything. Why? Well, he can because he memorized the key, right? But otherwise, you guys have to authenticate. Okay? So just for the purpose of this conference demonstration, let's open up the service endpoint. And again, I'm not opening up a machine. I'm not opening up my firewall. I'm not opening up a whole system. I'm opening up an endpoint. That's the point. Okay? So let's try to do that. On the cloud binding, I can opt in to say security relay client authentication type is none. Easy like that. And I can see in your faces, oh yes, security mode none. Yes, 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 yes. Don't go there. Don't go there, please. So let's try that again. F5. Let's take a browser. And let's try, oh, come on. Let's try to call that URL. Oh, that's a wrong URL in the browser. Okay, so how was the URI template? Who can remember? Input something? Oh yes, input equals blah, blah, blah. So, input, hi Christian, hey! Who was it? Who was quicker than me? Well, that's not a big deal to be quicker than I, but, oh, and look at that beautiful XML-ized string coming back, huh? That's what they call message transformation, huh? I put in a pure string and it comes out in its full beauty of XML. Oh, wow. Only one calling me? Are you really so bored? Nobody willed to give me some message like format C, or others are even more cool, like sending me VB script or stuff like that. Just remember, I'm doing a console write line, not a process.start. Okay, so whatever you send me, wow, that's what I call a full dump of audience participation. One line of hello. It's not working for you? You can't see the URL? If someone says it's not working, I'm saying you are mistyping. HTTPS by... I love you as well. What else? Real Dolmen rocks. I know that Real Dolmen rocks. You don't have to tell me. Okay, so I think you might get the idea. Okay, running a service locally on my machine and exposing it in a secure way. Secure means I need to authenticate. Secure means it's SSL protected and the SSL terminates at the service bus in order for others to access this service. And of course, I could now write a bunch of C# code like web client or web HTTP request, fire it up on a mobile device, and I would be able to talk to that service endpoint, but the actual service would be running still on-premise. Woohoo test! Wow. How many intelligent people in this room? Come on, you are more intelligent. Anyway, let's go further in the presentation. Okay, so that's a very, very simple way of looking at the service bus. If you are going to deal with WCF, you may want to have the need to actually put together a custom binding. And I'm a big fan of custom bindings. Custom custom bindings rock the WCF world. Okay? So if you need a custom binding with your special transport, then use one of those transport binding elements, and then on top just layer all those binding elements that you may need. Okay, wonderful. Next scenario, eventing. And now, Mr. Laptop, I may need you. You're here, okay. And you are also connected to the Wi-Fi, and the Wi-Fi... No? Well, service bus, cloud, network, hey? Okay, so who has a laptop with .NET 4 and Wi-Fi connected? Okay, nobody. Is it because there is no Wi-Fi in this room? Okay. So, just imagine, we had one of these guys in the audience. I'm going to show it all here. That's perfect, right? Selling people the idea of cloud, but showing everything on localhost. That's true love, huh? So the next scenario is eventing. Eventing means I want to be able to push messages from some service into the cloud, through the cloud, and the cloud then pushes it into some other system. That's the whole idea. Therefore, we have actually another binding. Let's take a look at that one. So here we have two applications. One is called the publisher and the other one is called the subscriber. Let's take a look at the subscriber first. So the subscriber is a Windows Forms application. Talk about stable and mature technology. And what we are using here is a net event relay binding. So that's the subscriber, right? So the subscriber is doing what? The subscriber wants to receive messages from the service bus. So in WCF terms, it is a service host. Coming back to my peer-to-peer messaging idea. On the other side, the publisher is trying to send messages up to the cloud. So in WCF terms, the publisher is, well, a client proxy, a channel factory. Okay? And that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm creating a channel factory with again, net event relay binding based on those secrets and based on those public URLs in the service bus. Just as I have shown you in the live coding sample a few moments ago. And they try to actually connect to the service bus. So what we are going to do now is, and this is especially spectacular if you do it from localhost. So let's take a subscriber. Let's take another subscriber. And let's take the publisher. And if any of you guys manages to get Wi-Fi, let me know. Okay. So, what we're going to do now is, if I say publish, there is a one-way message going to the cloud. And this one-way message is being relayed and multiplexed by the service bus. And the service bus is sending downstream all the messages to all those subscribers. So maybe let's first take a quick look at the code. The code looks like this. It's a news ticker interface with a one-way operation contract in it. Because net one-way relay binding and net event relay binding only work with one-way contracts. Okay? So if we look at this now in action, and this is especially spectacular on the local host, it works! Woo! So let's say something like, hello, and do you say Antwerpen or Antwerp? Antwerp is the English one. We in Germany say Antwerpen, and you as well? Yeah. So if you manage, but nobody has Wi-Fi, right? Because otherwise, I would have had a USB stick. You have Wi-Fi? Oh, even more sexy. So there is a sample application on that.
We don't really have the keylogger.
Yeah, if the keylogger is embedded, you won't recognize it. Is it a problem if I move into the dark here, cameraman? It's okay? And you have .NET 4 on it. Maybe you want to...
So.
You hope so.
Check this.
Maybe you want to copy the folder over?
Can't open it. Your keylogger is blocking.
Yes, that's because do right-click here and say browse, because it tries to open, I guess. There you go. Copy to the desktop, maybe. If you have questions, shoot. I'm just doing some personal conversation with this young man here. So start the exe. No, that's the config file.
I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. One up, 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 down, 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 yep. No, you don't seem to have the right .NET version. No, thanks for trying anyway. Oh, my USB stick. Just plug it, it's Windows 7. Thank you. Thank you for your participation anyway. So publish and subscribe works in a very, very nice way, but still this is totally WCF bound, right? So that's totally and tightly coupled to the programming model we know and we want and we love when it comes to .NET based systems and service oriented systems on the .NET framework. But it may not help a lot for others. By the way, there is some more information in the slide deck that you can download then later on about how it works with the ports. There is a certain range of ports that need to be available and open. I have done 3 projects in the past month with German and, well, Central European clients. And yeah, from time to time, it is just a problem if you have some older web proxies sitting in there. So Squid, for example. The Squid proxy is really posing some problems with the service bus because the service bus wants to do HTTP 1.1 and Squid usually only speaks 1.0. Small and tiny things and problems like that. If the default mode does not succeed and the default mode is opening up a TCP based channel to the service bus from our, for example, WCF host, if that does not work because your firewall only allows outgoing 80 and outgoing 443, for example, then the service bus can detect this. The bindings can detect this. If it does not work, you can also force it to use HTTP. And this usually works. But this does not mean that you may not run into those other problems I just had on the previous slide, right? With the proxies and the filtering proxies and stuff like that. And now connection mode. So I promised you that there is a way in order to convince the service bus bindings to try to punch holes into the recipient's firewall. let's try whether we can get this working. So let's create this one and let's open up that one. So what happens here is, this is a service host that is now going to register a number of and a bunch of endpoints on the service bus. HTTP based one, TCP based one, web HTTP based one, basic HTTP based one, you name it. So there are a bunch of, endpoints now listening, like think texture service bus, Windows Net, blah, 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 blah. Things like that, okay? And this is an application that again could run on your machine if you would have .NET 4 installed. Thanks again for trying. Okay, so now he busted my demo. We need to check offline, okay? Now, maybe some, I don't know, code access security policy thingy. We will check offline. I promise you. Because it really works. Okay, so, what I do here is I authenticate, and I authenticate with a client certificate. You see, I have a bunch of them. Now I authenticate with my security token service, the identity provider. It gets me back a token, and I know that I'm now logged in as Christian. And now I say, okay, connect through the service bus. And what should happen or could happen, depending on whether the network environment here allows it or not, that we can see either here or here that the connection status has changed. Okay? So let's say connect to service bus. So it's trying to initialize the connection to the service bus and tick, you saw it? Connection mode changed to direct. So that means now I have a direct connection between my service and my remote application. And I can tell you this is now using the service bus features, and you can see it's really blazingly fast. But it's not going relay, but it's going direct. And now you can imagine a number of interesting scenarios. I can already see it shining in your eyes. Okay? But before you enable this option, talk to your IT administrator. And just say him, oh, I am building an application that is completely firewall friendly. Okay? And then you may be safe. So this is how we can do it, but the problem, well, it's not a problem, it's just a fact that it is being done on net TCP relay binding only. Okay? So this hybrid connection mode, where it tries to negotiate and tries to get direct access to the service endpoint on the other side, works only with net TCP relay binding. The nice thing is there is an interface. So on the channel, on the client channel, we can do a get property. So that's WCF stylish programming model. Huh? We can say, give me a channel property called hybrid connection status. And when this connection status changed, for example, from relayed to direct or vice versa, then I get notified and then I can maybe, I don't know, change the UI or reboot the machine or I don't know, right? But you can get notified whether and when you are changing or when the service bus binding is changing the actual connection mode. Last but not least, message buffers. So message buffers is the second big programming model, the second big API. It has nothing to do with WCF. It is a pure HTTP-based model. That means we can have small, short-lived message buffers in the service bus cloud, and we can push messages there, and we can get messages from there. That's it. There will be a fully blown cute mechanism in service bus version 2, but I'm not talking about this one and I'm not going to show it because the API seems not to be stable. There will be a new CTP, I guess, shortly, 1, 2, 3 weeks in May. And then you can look at that one. So at the end, it's really HTTP. which means we just create a message buffer and we delete a message buffer and we get data from a message buffer and so on and so forth. So everybody and his mother has programmed HTTP on various platforms, so we just can do that as well. If we go here, so I have a WPF application, which is horribly complex, and I have a service or a console host that is now putting out messages. The interesting part is that the WPF application is using the web programming APIs, huh? Like, where is it? Come on, should be up here. Like system.net. Web client. The other application, the other process, is using the .NET API from the Service Bus SDK. This has nothing to do with WCF, it's just a convenience wrapper around the pure REST programming model. Okay? So if I start this, we should be able to see that the guy in the console is pushing data, and the other one is actually polling that message buffer in the cloud. It's doing long polling. Okay? So now here would have been the most coolest demonstration of this session with that other tablet-like device, but it's not working. So, A, there is no Wi-Fi, and B, I told you about those shared keys and shared secrets, right? I had to rebuild my service namespaces last night. And of course, the keys will get regenerated. And of course, the application has the key hard-coded. And of course, I would have needed some other hardware to build software for an iOS device. And of course, that other hardware with that other operating system sits in Germany. Therefore, you can just look at that iPad, at the tablet. Okay? So just imagine, there would be a nice app. Actually, the app is on there, right? So the app is on there. It's here. It's called Episode Monitor with a nice cloud symbol. It tries to start and then, poof. Cool, huh? Very stable platform. So yeah, just imagine, it's the exact same code. Because I used Monotouch on the iOS platform in order to take the exact same code, the HTTP-related code from the WPF subscriber, put it into Monotouch on the Mac, on that other hardware, on that other operating system, compiled it, put it into the app, and then deployed that app onto the device. And it just works. It's the same code. C# on that other device, talking through the service bus to my service running on-premise. Okay, security. I think, how many minutes? Two and a half. Security. I showed to you that there is a default shared secret approach, right? But what I already showed to you, but you didn't recognize it maybe, was that we can actually federate with existing identity providers through the SAML token format and related protocols, like the SWAT. SWAT is a token format, but the REP protocol. So that demonstration that I gave here, let's close that one down. That one here, with a bunch of endpoints, right? You can just F5 it again. This is not using a shared secret approach, but it's now going to my identity provider, to my security token service. This could be Active Directory-based, this could be a custom STS, as in this case, gets a SAML token. That SAML token will be converted, and then it will be sent across the claims across to Service Bus, and Service Bus again, looking at the listen, send, and or manage claims, will decide whether I'm allowed to open these endpoints or not. So you can completely integrate with existing security infrastructures if you have a security token service that can understand the various, well, communication protocols and token formats. And as you can see, it's just running again, having service bus endpoints exposed through the cloud without having to share any kind of shared key or shared secret. Wonderful. Which brings me to the end. Oh yes, this thing costs. Currently it's a little bit of a difficult pricing model. If you are using it, try to make sure that you are looking at your Windows Azure platform invoice regularly. It's based on a, well, connection per month. It's really, if you think it through, it may come up as a quite a complex formula. I'm not going too deep into it. I guess they need to come up with a different pricing model, or at least an additional pricing model, because otherwise I can imagine that the adoption may not be that high and may not be as high as the service bus actually deserves it. Because in my opinion, the service bus is one of the means in order to bridge the gap between the on-premise, the local world, and the cloud world. And I'm not seeing a lot of customers going into the cloud completely at once, if ever. So there will be some applications, some system running in the cloud. There will be some communication mechanisms that can establish communication through the cloud. And one of these mechanisms, this rendezvous, communication rendezvous point in the cloud, is the Windows Azure App Fabric Service Bus. And I think it's a very, very robust version 1. I'm looking forward to the nice features in version 2, especially the queuing feature, where we can imagine a number of very, very interesting high-end, high-load communication and load balancing scenarios. And I hope that they will release it anytime soon. So as I mentioned, the CDP should show up in May, and then hopefully sometime in the summer time frame, they will open it up and release the version 2. So, service bus, communication rendezvous point in the cloud, optimized, well, the programming model for WCF, but you can also use non-WCF features, currently limited to the idea of of message buffers. I showed to you how to use the service bus for service remoting. I showed how to use it for eventing on local hosts. So next time we will have a lot of Wi-Fi enabled laptops in here where it will actually work to demonstrate it in a distributed manner. I showed to you some security aspects. I showed to you the message buffer API and how you can use it in a non-WCF way. And I think it's time for you to make the step towards the cloud and bridge the gap between you and on-premise and local environments and the cloud. And I guess the service bus is the best feature and the best means in order to do this very first step. Thank you for listening.